Hello and welcome to the Field of 68, where me, Rob Dosh, the host of a UConn podcast called Top Dogs, is thrilled to be able to sit here and talk probably 26 minutes or so after I finished producing an episode for Monday morning where Liam McNeely had committed to UConn from Friday afternoon. Jeff, listen to what I did. I'm Rob Dosh. I got Jeff Goodman with me. Listen to what my dumbass did, right? I went this morning, 9 a.m. I knew something was coming today. Right. So I knew I wanted to get it out early. 9 a.m. this morning, I sat there. I recorded an entire podcast. It was about 35 minutes of me talking about Liam McNeely, talking about Alex Caravan, talking about the potential fit of Aiden Mahaney, the potential fit of Kobe Bray in this UConn lineup, talking about everything that had to do with everything. And you know what I did? There's a little button right here on the side of my microphone. Right.
Yeah.
That's a mute button. The mute button was on. So when I went back to edit it, there was no sound. So I had to go back again and re-record the entire thing. So it was an eventful
moment. All right, let's get to it. Well, let's get to UConn.
We're sitting here now.
Nobody wants to hear about your mute button. I actually love the mute
button.
Watch this.
You know what I can do? Now I just muted you so nobody could hear anything that you're saying. So whenever you start talking, you should never have given me this power, Jeff. You should never have given me this power. Listen, anyway, UConn got a commitment today from St. Mary's transfer, Aiden Mahaney, a guy that averaged 14 points a game, 2.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists for St. Mary's as a sophomore, a local kid from Lafayette, California, which is a town right next to Moraga, California. What do you make of UConn's commitment? What do you make of Aiden Mahaney? And what do you make of this fit, a West Coast kid coming to get coached by a bunch of New York and New Jersey maniacs in Storrs, Connecticut?
Well, listen, we knew UConn had to reload somehow, and you know, they've got all the pop to be able to do it. They don't have to offer more money than a lot of these other schools right now. And that's where they're getting, you know, they're offering good money. Don't get me wrong for NIL, but Dan Hurley says he's got the formula, right? And that's what's helped him win back-to-back national titles with different casts. Can he do it a third year? You know, we'll see. Obviously, you need talent. And Liam McNeely, number one, and I know you talked about him for a while already, Liam McNeely does not play like an incoming freshman. He does not. I've seen him play plenty. He plays like an upperclassman in college. He knows how to move the ball. He can shoot it. What does Dan Hurley want? He wants dudes that know how to play, that have high IQs, that are tough, that can shoot it, that are skilled, that can move the ball, that can do a little bit of everything. Both of these guys possess that. The only thing I worry about a little bit with Aiden Mahaney is like the toughness factor. 3,000 miles away. Now, he's a junior now in college. He's not a freshman coming in, but 3,000 miles away, and you're going to get MF by Dan Hurley. He's not Randy Bennett. He's a different type of character as a head coach. I think Mahaney will be fine, but I think there's going to be some growing pains going between the two, Hurley and Mahaney, but I love Aiden Mahaney. His talent level, you know that. Like, I love the dude, and I love Liam McNeely. I just think, again, they probably need one more key piece here.
Yeah, you know, I think with the way that the roster is kind of shaken out, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how the culture is kind of maintained here. And what I mean by that is we've seen the last 2 years a level of development within the program that has made the value of the transfer portal less of a priority in Storrs than it has been other places. And what I mean that by that is in 2023, they won it because they developed Adama Sanogo, Andre Jackson, and Jordan Hawkins from good recruits into NBA players as upperclassmen, right? I think if you look at what they did last season, getting lucky enough to get Donovan Klingon to be able to come back to school, being able to develop Alex Caravan and Tristan Newton, and then going out and getting the likes of Steph Castle and Cam Spencer, they plugged the holes within their internal development by going into the portal. And this year, with the potential that all five of their starters from last year's title team could end up being in the league, Alex Caravan is obviously the question mark there. That's going to be a decision that goes down to the deadline to withdraw from the draft. I wonder where the continuity comes from, right? I wonder where that internal development comes from. If they're also going to go out and try to get an Aiden Mahaney, to take over the point guard role, a Terrace Reed to take over the five spot, Liam McNeely to come in on the wing. Like, will Jalen Stewart take the next step? Will Solo Ball take the next step? Will Hassan Diarra take the next step? And if all of those guys do take the next step and Alex Caravan ends up coming back to school, is there going to be enough minutes to go around for everybody to stay happy and everybody to be like, I don't know if Jalen Stewart wants to be 10 minutes a game again next season. I don't know if Jaden Ross wants to be 10 minutes a game next season. That is my biggest question mark when it comes to what UConn is going to be this upcoming year, is how all of the pieces they have end up fitting together without sacrificing the culture that that Coach Lee has developed in stores and on that campus. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but it's not like they have 12 dudes right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, if they bring, you know, if Caravan comes back, yeah, then you probably have a little bit of a question mark. But, you know, McNeely's still a freshman coming in, earning his minutes. Mahaney's obviously, we know is going to play. Between Terrace Reed and Samson Johnson, you know what your five-man situation is right now. You know, mm-hmm. That's the one known commodity right now, right? The five-man situation is known. Mahaney's going to play 25 to 30 minutes coming in. You know that. My biggest question is, like, Diarra. Like, what role does he play this year? And do you bring in, like you said, if you bring in another guard, I don't know.
I have it all written out. So this is what the roster looks like right now. At the guard spots, you have Hassan Diarra, Aiden Mahaney, Solo Ball, and Ahmad Noel, right? The freshman coming in. And basically, those guys are going to be responsible for the 80 minutes at the point guard spot and the two guard spot. My guess is Haas, Aiden, and Solo all get about 20 to 25 minutes a game, and then Ahmad Noel cleans up the rest of it, right? 10 minutes a game as a freshman coming in, prove yourself early on, then maybe you get more. At the five spot, it's Terrace Reed, Samson Johnson. You're going to be able to get a couple of minutes here or there from Yusuf Sangare, but you pretty much know what you got there. And then the 3-4 spot, you got Liam McNeely, Jaden Ross, Jalen Stewart, Isaiah Abraham, with the potential of AK coming back. And if you have all of that, then I think you're in a good spot. If you don't have Caravan coming back, then you're really trusting McNeely or Jalen Stewart to take a big step forward. And frankly, I think that Stewart's in a place where he's ready to take that step. And I would not want to bring another piece in if he is right. Like, if he's ready to be a guy that can get double figures.
Okay, so is that year, roster, is that, take Caravan out of it. Take Caravan out of it. Mm-hmm. And tell me, is that roster one that you can, now again, we didn't foresee last year's roster winning the whole thing again, but is that roster, even with Dan Hurley coaching him, a roster that you can see getting back to the Final Four? I'm not sure you can. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to tell because we don't know everybody else's roster yet either.
Yeah, what I would say is if Solo Ball takes the leap that a lot of people think he will, like I've heard they're kind of hoping and slash expecting a Jordan Hawkins type year two from him. I don't know if we're talking All-American, like lottery pick type, but I do think he could be a 15 points per game guy. If you get that kind of jump from him, then it's a different conversation. But no, but it's also – you lost three players to the NBA 2 years ago. You lose five players potentially to the NBA this year. Like, at some point, you have to take a step. Like, you can't stay at that level for forever, right? At some point, you're just going to run out of great NBA guys because they're all going to be in the NBA. So at some point, you're going to just be a top 15 team.
Yes and no. Yes and no, because you're in a different time and age right now where you just go to the portal and everybody goes to the portal. So I understand what you're saying, but I also feel like UConn's got more juice than anybody else right now to be able to get these portal guys. They don't may not have Arkansas money, but they've got good enough NIL that they can get pretty good players. So like they're not and, fighting.
And real quick on that, just I want to elaborate on that point. The NIL for them has gotten to the point where it doesn't matter, right? Like, there's no point in, let's just say, Liam McNeely arguing for $400,000 extra dollars that maybe he would have gotten in a different offer, when he knows that if you go to this program and they coach you up and you have the success that you expect, then you know what you're going to do? You're going to end up climbing maybe higher on the draft board than you were before. I think we've seen that consistently with the guys that have made it to the league from the program. So taking a little bit of a pay cut this year means that you're going to end up making it back three, four, five, 10 times as much on the back end, maybe even as soon as next season. So that's why they're able to get these guys at a bargain basement. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's why they're able to get discounted. These guys at a lower price.
Yeah, yeah. Discounted rate, I would say, is more probably appropriate. but yeah, I mean, listen, they've got a roster that's certainly good enough right now. But like you said, I think kind of Stewart is the X factor to me, especially if Caravan doesn't come back. Like, if Caravan comes back, you know, all right, you know what you got at the four and the five, and Mahaney's really good. Like, I'm not worried about Aiden Mahaney. So they're, like, to me, you don't have many weaknesses. Solo Ball, like you said, he needs to make shots this year. He needs to be consistent and step forward. But Mahaney can be an elite shooter. Like, and he's been coached up. That's the other part of getting Aiden Mahaney. Now, Randy Bennett, his personality is completely different than Dan Hurley. But you know what Randy Bennett is? He is a hell of a ball coach. And he's going to have Aiden Mahaney ready for everything other than the Danny Hurley MF bombs. Like, that's it. That's it.
Yeah. So St. Mary's is one of the best ball screen offenses that you're going to find. They're always one of the heaviest ball screen offenses in college basketball. And there's always a point guard on that roster that ends up being one of the best ball screen point guards in the country. Aiden Mahaney was that guy. According to Synergy, he was in the 88th percentile in points per possession in ball screens that ended in a pass. And he was in the 85th percentile of ball screens that ended with him shooting it in terms of points per possession. So he's a very, very good point guard. And the role that he's going to be asked to play is similar to what Tristan Newton did last year, where it's going to be a lot of DHOs, a lot of the zoom actions, a lot of ball screens, a lot of stuff where there's 9 seconds left on the shot clock. All of the stuff that they run didn't work. And it's kind of, all right, Aiden, go create a shot. And in terms of their style of play, like, there, it's, I think it's very good process for the staff to end up on Aiden Mahaney when they go through the portal. Cause he's another guy that's like 6'3", a little bit skinny, but kind of able to get his shot off despite the fact that he doesn't have like these overwhelming physical measurables. I think it's, you know what? I think him and Liam McNeely is you're going to see a lot of very similar stuff when you compare what they do to what Cam Spencer and Tristan Newton did. Sure. Maybe not quite at the same level. McNeely's going to be a freshman. Spencer was a 23-year-old fifth-year senior that's seen like everything you could possibly see in the college basketball ranks. But I'm very excited about McNeely. Let's talk about him a little bit. I'm very excited about what he can be as a freshman in UConn's offense.
So before we get to McNeely, I want to hit you on one thing, though.
Okay, hit me.
I want to hit you on the defense, because that's where I worry about Aiden Mahaney more than anything, is on the defensive end. And that's where I worry about this UConn team compared to last year's. And again, last year's was so elite when you had Donovan Klingon in the lineup. Terrace Reed is a really good defensive big man, but he is not Donovan Klingon. So you're taking a step down at the five. You're taking a step down to me going from Tristan Newton to Aiden Mahaney on the defensive end.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to be like a top five defense next year, but that's what happens when you lose the best defensive five man and maybe the best on-ball defender in college basketball. Like, it's just, you're going to have to take a step back. The question is, will they be good enough to be able to be like competitive on that end, or is it going to be something where they get run over? And I think that they have enough good positional defenders combined with enough athletic bodies. Like, what I would be very interested to see the lineups where you put Samson at the five, you have Asan Diarra and Solo Ball out there, and you put some of the athletes on the wing, and you just kind of say, go press. Like, go run around. Like, we're going to put as many big, long, athletic dudes out there as possible and just run around and make life miserable for you. I don't know if it'll work, but I think it'll be a lot of fun to just kind of see it in action for a little bit.
Yeah, and getting to McNeely, I mean, I just think he's one of those guys that you plug in, and he can play with anybody, and he can just do so many different things. You know, he's big. Again, he doesn't look like a freshman. He doesn't play like a freshman. He can shoot the hell out of the ball. He moves the ball. He doesn't take a lot of bad shots. He defends positionally very well. Like, again, it's going to be an adjustment for him as a freshman, and get back to it. Mahaney, you put him in the lineup too. You have Terrace Reed, like you said, we'll see how good they are defensively. If they can be a top 50 defense, to be honest, especially early on in the season. But I love Liam McNeely. I love him. I loved him when he committed and signed to Indiana. I think he's one of those guys that just is all about the right things. And again, Dan Hurley talks about that culture and taking the right guys in that are about the right things, that know how to play the right way. McNeely, you know, obviously Mahaney. I think those are two guys that you added that's what UConn prioritized. They're able to do that. Like, that's the beauty right now. If you're Dan Hurley, Luke Murray and Kamani Young are probably bringing a bunch of dudes to you, a ton of guys, and they're able to kind of handpick and say, like, these are the guys that we want to go after. And these were the guys they wanted to go after. And these were the guys they got, where, it, you know, 2 years ago, they got lucky to some extent. I'm not saying completely lucky, but like, there was some luck involved there. Even with Cam Spencer, there was a little bit of luck involved. I think now you're at a point where you're like John Calipari was 10 years ago at Kentucky. You're just saying, like, we're going to pick our guy. That's who we're going after. And we're probably going to get him.
Yeah. I do just want to circle back on the one point that you made, because I've thought about this a lot in the offseason, because both of us know that there were some internal struggles with the relationship between Tristan Newton and Dan Hurley, right? It took a while for Dan, and he's been open about this, to get to the point where he understood that a player does not have to be as overtly emotional and competitive, as like outwardly expressive as he is, to also want to win as badly as he does. And I think that Tristan Newton taught him a lesson when it comes to, he can coach up guys that are more chill, that are about the same things, even if their personality outwardly is very different than his. And I think that that will help with the adjustment for Aiden Haney, right? Like, we said this, I can't remember, we talked about it at some point when we were in Phoenix, at how the fact that he was able to get the best out of Tristan Newton is going to be a learning curve for him in terms of not limiting the players that he tries to bring in, right? If you're going to get the Cam Spencers and the Steph Castles and those basketball maniacs that are very outwardly competitive, and you're only targeting those guys, you have a certain sample of players you're going to be able to bring in. But if you also have figured out how to be able to coach like the more laid back, chill, relaxed dudes that still want to win just as badly as you do, but aren't going to be screaming and pounding their chests and snarling and cussing out student sections when you're running down the court, then you're also, in theory, going to be able to coach the Tristan Newtons and the Aiden Mahaneys as well. So you're going to be able to get better players that maybe personality-wise wouldn't have worked 3 years ago. So I think that that is a good sign. And knowing that they were able to get him even after he did things like, go on a visit to Kentucky, is a promising sign for where this program is at right now.
Yeah, and obviously Creighton took Pop Isaac, so that took them out of the equation. He wasn't going to Virginia. So it really did come down to a two-horse race between UConn and Kentucky. And listen, Kentucky's still not Kentucky, okay? Like, they think they are, but they still lost John Calipari, who was the best recruiter probably of our lifetime in college basketball. Let's face it. Like, I know Coach K, what he did was incredible at Duke, but he kind of built the brand and did it with longevity. But what Cal did, and again, I've said it over and over, like, he's the best car salesman there is, used car salesman, whatever you want to call him. He is. I mean, what he did there was incredible. Mark Pope doesn't have that same cachet. He doesn't. And I'm not sure he's ever going to. No, I am sure. He's never going to get that cachet. He's never going to be able to get those players that John Calipari got. Dan Hurley right now doesn't have John Calipari cachet, but he's got as much as anybody right now, I think, in college basketball.
And I do think it's a little bit different, because here's the only thing I would push back on. I think that Hurley and UConn do have the cachet that Calipari has, but Calipari was about putting together the most talented roster that he possibly could. Like, all he wanted was the best guys in theory, like the best potential basketball players, the best guys where you just kind of looked at their physical measurables, you looked at their athleticism, you looked at what their recruiting rankings were, and you kind of said, these are going to be the guys that have the best chance of being all-stars at 22, right? And putting together those rosters. Whereas UConn is looking at guys and they're saying, okay, we need the best fits with potential, with NBA potential that could play in the league that will fit into what we want to do. And I think that any player right now where they kind of say, this guy fits what we want to do, they can pretty much go out and get him. And because I think that we're seeing that in terms of who they're recruiting, who's committing, and how they're able to get those plays. Does that make sense? So okay. I think they would target different guys, but I think that they get whoever they want to get. They just want to get a different player than what Kentucky would have gotten. And I think it's also fair to say the players that they are bringing in are, I don't want to say like UConn is a, it would be a reach for them to go, but they're UConn guys. So maybe it's not quite the same level nationally, but if they want a player, I think they're probably going to be able to get that guy.
I think the biggest difference is the way they put their message out there, right? That's like Dan exactly. Hurley, there is no bullshit with him. He is going to tell you how he feels. And it's almost like he doesn't really know how to bullshit. Where Calipari, he was elite at bullshit. Like he was. To his credit, I'm saying this as a positive. John Calipari was all about the message and the marketing and trying to sell the next kid. I just don't think that's Dan Hurley. I mean, obviously he's trying to sell the next kid, but he's doing it in a completely different way that, again, look at what he said last week, right? On one of the shows, I don't remember which one it was, but it was basically like, listen, if you're a kid with a bunch of bullshit around you and you got all this crap around you and you're asking for the most money and you've got all these hangers on and you're not about the right things, we don't want you. Like, did Cal ever say that? No, he would never say that, ever. He was all about getting the highest profile, highest rated, most talented player to Kentucky and then trying to figure out, could he coach him up? How could he put all that whole group together? But he wanted the
you
most
know, talented. You know what I will say to Cal's credit is he would never say the stuff that Hurley said. Like, he would not say that publicly. Yep. But if you go back and look at who he got, especially in like the 2012 through 2019, like the prime Calipari recruiting years before COVID kind of turned everything the other direction, he always ended up with the guys that where you would say, yeah, they're really good kids, and didn't really end up with the guys where you're like, yeah, you know what? There's a lot of red flags attached to this guy and some of the people. You know what I'm saying?
It got better as he went along.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He went along at Kentucky, he didn't have to take as many risks. You know, listen, Boogie Cousins was a risk. And I took him from Memphis. And at Memphis, he had to take a different caliber of player to some degree. Right? At Kentucky, it was, yeah, he didn't have to take chances on you know, maybe a character of a kid or anything like that as time went on. He had built it to whereas before Mike Krzyzewski decided, oh, screw it, I've had enough. I'm going the one and done route too. He owned that. He owned that market because he sold that market.
It's still so wild to me that we are at this point with Dan Hurley at UConn, right? Because
It was
15 months ago. It was January 2023. It was literally last year where, I mean, Andrea talked about this with us. She thought they were getting fired. He thought he was getting fired in January. Like, they thought it was over. She told us on one of the episodes of Top Dogs that, like, she had to call Brett Just's agent to get him to, like, or no, Brett Just had to call her to get her to, like, cuss him out and be like, get out of your funk, man. You're going to blow this all up if you can't get your shit together. Like, that's where it was 15 months ago in January of 2023. And now we're here and they've won back-to-back national titles. And we're sitting here saying, yeah, you know what? Dan Hurley might be a better recruiter than Prime John. Like, what are we even talking about? Like, how are we at this point?
Yeah, I'm not saying that.
I know, but you know what I mean? Like, the blow up that he's argument, had.
Right. You could actually have a discussion about this right now. No, again, anybody with any clue is going to say John Calipari's, again, probably the best recruiter we've ever seen. Well, maybe not ever, because there were some great recruiters before John Calipari, you know, but ultimately he was as elite as we've seen over the last 20 years. But now in this next phase of college basketball and the portal and how it's changed, Dan Hurley, you're already seeing it. Like, I love how the roster construction, to me, is everything right now. Like, you need talent, obviously. You need talent. You need high-end talent. But the roster construction, what they've done the last couple of years is everything. Not just, again, skill guys. Like he said, after losing New Mexico State, he was done trying to win games by grinding it out and winning in the 50s or 60s. But experience, adding a young dude like Liam McNeely, right? Obviously having different types of five men right now. He's had that over the last – now this will be the third straight year that he's had kind of a contrast in five men. This five-man duo is probably the closest in what they bring of any of them. But, again, they're still different. And I just – again, I you look at so many other coaches and teams out there that don't have enough shooting. Bill Self's learned. Right after last year, he learned. Like, I'm not doing this shit again. I'm going to go get shooters around Hunter Dickinson, DeJuan Harris, KJ Adams. Like, I think Mike Woodson – even has learned a little bit. He's not there. He hasn't gone overboard like I thought he should have this year. But, you know, Dan Hurley, you're not going to worry about shooting. You're not going to worry about experience. You're probably not going to worry about overall toughness. You might have a guy or two on that team that you're like, I don't know. But the culture is so strong that they're going to be tougher because they're going to have no choice because of all those other dudes around them.
Yeah. The talent identification, and I went through and I was thinking about doing a study on this over the summer, and I don't think I have the willingness to put in the hours that it would take to do this. But if you go back and look at all of the commitments that UConn has gotten from guys that were really expected to be players and how many they've actually like missed on, how many misidentifications or misevals they've had, right? The 2023 class, I think, is probably too soon to judge. But I think it's fair to say Cam Spencer was a hit. Steph Castle was a hit. And we both probably think that Solo Ball and Jalen Stewart will end up being hits. And then Jaden Ross is a kind of roll of the dice outside top 100 guy. Eustace Sangari is bench. Like, I think all of that, you can't say any of those were misses yet, right? The 2022 class, Donovan Clingan, that's a hit. Hassan Diarra. Probably counts as a hit, right? Tristan Newton. I think that was a hit. Naheem Moline helped them win a national title. Maybe he wasn't the best player in the world, but St. John's poaching for more money. So it is what it is. The 2021 class, Jordan Hawkins, Alex Caravan, Samson Johnson. The guys they missed on, if anything, Rasul Diggins and Corey Floyd. So, like, we're talking, you got to go back to 2021 to find like the first obvious recruiting miss that they've had. And then, like 2020, like, you keep going back. And the guys that they identify that will fit with the program end up fitting with the program. And I think more than anything else, that is the most important thing that a coaching staff can do when it comes to recruiting, right? If you can go out and get whoever you want and the guy that you want ends up being a complete bum or a complete bust, like, there's no point in doing it. But I think that this staff, what they do better than anything else, even coaching up their players, even these fancy plays, like the cult, whatever it is, what they do better than anything else is figure out who is going to work and what they want to do between both the skill sets and the personalities. Like, that's, I don't think it gets appreciated how hard that is to do.
Well, I think part of it, I mean, again, a big part of it is Kamani Young and Luke Murray, right? They know him by now. It's pretty easy to know what you can get away with and what you can't with Dan Hurley, right? Who you can bring in and who you can't. Luke worked for him before. Obviously, Kamani's been with him for a while now. So I think sometimes it just takes time to understand, like, all right, I can't bring this dude. I can't bring this transfer. Like, Mahaney's an interesting one. Again, I think he'll be fine, but he's a little different. But if you feel good about kind of everybody else in the overall toughness and defense, again, I go back to what Dan Hurley told me before the season, which is we're not losing games in the 60s anymore. We're not doing it. Like, if we lose a game, it's not going to be grinding out, not being able to score the ball, not going to be able to shoot the ball. And that's where I think they felt like Abe Mahaney, he checks pretty much every box other than the one right now of defense and a questionable one about, you know, maybe toughness just because we haven't seen it yet. But I think Mahaney looks like he's like 12, but I think he's tougher than people give him credit for.
Look, if you're going to average 14 a game for a five seed for back-to-back years, like, there's probably a level of toughness. Like,
and the other thing about it, great year up.
Right? No, he didn't. But here's the thing:
he did not have a great sophomore year. We thought they would be better. We thought he would be better, especially early in the season. He struggled. They struggled. He wasn't really the best player on his own team. Like, well,
you know what it, you know what it was?
Was you probably know, the best player on that St. Mary's team this past year.
Yeah, you know what I think is a really good sign is if you go back, and I'm going to bring it up here right now. If you look at the KenPom numbers for last year, and I know you hate KenPom, but
I love Kenny Pom.
Yeah, well, I mean, we talk about St. Mary's, and people probably think of them as some mid-major team that shoots a bunch of threes, that spaces it out, that doesn't really guard, that wins based on offense, right? Well, last season they ranked 46th nationally in offensive efficiency and 15th nationally in defensive efficiency. The year before that, they ranked 44th nationally in offensive efficiency and 10th nationally in defensive efficiency. Like, you could say whatever you want about St. Mary's, and you can question them if you want, but like, that was a really good defensive team. And there were, especially last season, like there were times where Aiden Mahaney was the point of attack. Now, I think part of the reason that he had a tougher, where he didn't, I don't want to say he didn't progress as a, like, I don't want to say he regressed. I think it was more like he didn't take a step. He was kind of who he was again as a sophomore. And I think the reason for that is they lost Logan Johnson, and he went from being the second guy, the complimentary guy, to being the face of the program. And sometimes it could be a little bit difficult if, like, you are the first guy in the scouting report versus, like, the third guy in the scouting report. So I think that was kind of what we saw happen there. But I'm into it, man. What about Kobe Brea? We've had a bunch of people in the chat ask whether or not we think that Aiden Mahaney means that Kobe Brea won't commit. And my take is that I think that they probably only wanted one of the two because of the – I mentioned it earlier, but like the continuity and being able to have guys stick around. I think that there's a little bit of concern about whether or not you will keep a Jalen Stewart and a Solo Ball if you go out and you bring in three new players recruited over them. But I don't, my guess is that after the weekend where Kobe Brea visited and Aiden Mahaney visited, seeing Kobe Brea then go at a new visit, like we all thought it was just going to be Duke and UConn that was getting the visits. Canceled the Duke visit before he got to UConn, then added a Kentucky visit after going to UConn, and then you get the commitment from Aiden Mahaney. Like, you connect those dots, Goodman, and it's not I don't think it's necessarily ideal for Kobe.
Yeah, Ray. I don't either. But again, listen, you know, to me, if you're Dan Hurley and you want to add another shooter, I don't think it's necessary at this point. You know, I would think if I'm Kobe Brea, I'm looking at this and I'm saying, like, this probably isn't where I should be either. Like, it just doesn't fit at this point. If you're Kobe Brea, you want somewhere that you can make an impact. You look at one of these other spots, to me, whether it's, you know, North Carolina, somebody like that, I think you're going to have a bigger impact right now. And I think if you're Dan Hurley, I don't want to say this ever, like, you don't ever – worry about having too much shooting in a way, but like, where are you going to be able to play?
It's too many. At this point, it would be too many bodies, right? Like, you need, at some point, you either need to decide you're going all in on the portal, or you're going to make sure that you have some kind of player development and an avenue for those players to grow within the program. And I think if you take Kobe Brea this year, you kind of cut off that avenue for the player development. And I think that being able to make sure that you have guys that will be culture guys long-term is maybe it'll take a hit on what they can be this season, what their ceiling is. But I think in the terms of the long-term ability of the program to maintain an elite level, I think that it's important to be able to do that. So we'll see the way that ends up playing out. But I would, considering that North Carolina just added, who committed to them over the weekend? The Belmont kid, what's his name?
Tyson.
Yeah. Considering that the Duke visit doesn't seem like it's happening, Kobe Brea has visited and moved on from UConn, and
Kansas got a bunch of dudes. Kansas got
Ryland Griffin. North Carolina got Kay Tyson. My guess is that
his list could be completely different now.
Yeah. My guess. Well, I think I would not be surprised if he ended up at Kentucky. I think that that's kind of where.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen. They need shooting. They need scoring. If I'm Mark Pope, I'm building a team right now that if I can get a dude, great. But if not,
you know what? Save this for tomorrow. We got a show coming up tomorrow, 9 p.m. Tuesday night. We have so much to talk about beyond just UConn. But given that the reigning national champs just added a commitment today, we wanted to make sure to jump on and react Because there's nothing better than recording an entire UConn update on a Monday morning, only to have it last for about 5 minutes in terms of its relevance next and time. Accuracy.
Next time, don't hit the mute button, dumbass.
It is what it is, man. It is what it is. Jeff Goodman, Rob Doster, Field of 68. We will see you guys tomorrow night. 9-